And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you. Joseph Cooper is on vacation. And joining us now is chef, author, syndicated columnist, and cordon bleu chef, Linda Gassenheimer.
Did you get it all in? I'm glad.
I got it all in. And our friend, Linda Gassenheimer. So big changes ahead for the food and food section in the Miami Herald, Linda.
Very exciting.
What are we doing today?
Yes. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi.
Nice to see you. Yeah, news from the Miami Herald food section. Evan Benn is taking over the reins after Kathy Martin retired. Now, Evan has returned to Miami from his successful stint as a food critic and beer columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and he's here to give us the scoop on his plans for the food section. Evan Benn, congratulations and welcome. Do we have you, Evan?
Hi, I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay. Congratulations and welcome.
Oh, thanks a lot, Linda.
Great to have you with us. And we'd also like to have our listeners with us. Here's your chance to give Evan feedback on what you like in this food section and what you'd love to see more of in the food section. We'd love to hear from you. Give us your ideas. Call us 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
Or email radio@WLRN.org.
And also with us, of course, is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype, and he gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column that you can read in today's Miami Herald. You could also read Fred's wine column in today's Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, I understand Evan is a beer guy, so I'm going to talk to him about beer.
All right. Sounds good to me.
No bubbly today, friend?
Not today. Well, beer is
beer's bubbly.
That's true.
Evan Benn, heading the food section. So what's your vision going forward for the section?
Well, hey, before we get started, I just wanted to say I'm very sorry to hear about the loss of Rich Davis. I just heard about that a few minutes ago and really enjoyed his show and his personality, so that's a shame.
Yeah, thank you so much. He'll be very, very missed.
In terms of the food section, I'm kind of taking a if it's not broke, don't fix it approach with that. We have a wonderful staple of columnists, which I think I have to say with Linda and Fred in the room, right?
Yes, of course. Thank you.
Thank you.
We really do have some wonderful content, each week and then kind of on a semi-weekly basis in terms of Cook's Corner with Linda Cicero, which was kind of our main feature today. She went back and former food editor and longtime Cook's Corner writer. She went back and looked at some of her 10 all-time favorite recipes.
That was a great column today, Evan. And I happen to remember when she was the food editor at the Herald.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Readers just really respond, Linda, to recipes. They respond, Fred knows, to recommendations. So our columnists do a really good job of kind of sussing out what's good, what's out there, and telling readers how to do it themselves. So I'm not going to change anything there. We have added a beer column to the weekly food section to complement Fred's wine picks. I go in there and pick a craft beer of the week. Craft beer is really huge now in South Florida. Tom Hudson just did a Sunshine Economy piece on it. And I'm also kind of hoping to look at more, cookbooks and kind of promote them and show what's out there and maybe take a recipe or two from them.
Sounds great. Well, we want our listeners to call in. They may have some ideas for you.
Yeah, I'm all ears.
Yeah, okay, great. Bonnie, do we have an email?
Well, we do. Catherine would like you to please feature more whole grain recipes.
Yeah, we have heard a lot about, healthier recipes, whole grain recipes, diabetes-friendly recipes, gluten-free-friendly recipes. So I will take that to heart. Thank you.
Well, that's interesting, Evan, that, several years ago, I think people don't realize that my Dinner in Minutes column has always fit the government guidelines for nutrition. Never said that because health wasn't sort of in, but I think it's in now. Don't you think so?
I do, and I think it's always in, but whether it's in vogue, whether people know that it's in, whether it's really on the front pages like it has been with the gluten-free fad or with, I don't want to call it a fad, but
Right.
But yeah, I think it's definitely more on the forefront of people's minds, and they are paying attention to labels and ingredients, and that translates to healthier food, healthier cooking.
Evan, are you going to write the beer column?
I am. I'm going to keep writing the beer column, and I'm a writer at heart, so one thing I hope to bring to the section is more local profile cover stories that I will write, and then we don't have to rely as much on, wire stories that might not shine a spotlight so much on what's going on here in South Florida. Mm.
That's great.
Evan,
yes.
I understand Mark. That even now that you're the food editor, you're still writing other things like the coming of the new publisher at the Herald. Are they working you pretty hard over there?
Well, for the past several months before I took over the food position, I was the economy beat reporter. So I was on the business desk, and I still have a foot tethered to that until they find a replacement for me. So right now I'm kind of pulling double duty. Which is nothing.
80-hour weeks, huh?
It's nothing new at newspapers in this day and age, right?
That's right, for sure.
Right. Well, 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. It's your chance to talk to the Miami Herald food editor, Evan Benn. Evan, social media, it's so big and all. Tell us, are you going to be doing things with that? What's going on with it?
Yes, absolutely. Social media is huge. It's a huge part of the way people communicate about food these days, whether they take a picture of the turkey sandwich they had for lunch and post it on Instagram, or they're tweeting to a chef about a good or bad experience they had at their restaurant. So we definitely want to get in on that, and I think there's a big opportunity for us to kind of jump into that realm. There are a lot of food blogs and websites in South Florida that do a really great job of kind of telling you what news is going on, what chefs are opening, what restaurants. And the fact of the matter is, we have that content, too, at our sister site, Miami.com. Leslie Abravanel is really the queen of South Florida gossip, but also in terms of she knows what chefs are doing what, who's unveiling what new menu, who's feuding with whom, who's opening, who's closing. So,
yeah, right, absolutely.
So I'm really trying to do a better job of promoting her content there at Miami.com/restaurants. And one way we're doing that is I just created a Twitter account, at Miami Herald Food. And that's just one way that we're kind of getting out everything that we do, both in print and also online. So the things that appear in Thursday's paper, I'm going to tweet out and give people links to. And then the things that are kind of online-only content, those little gossipy nibbles and bits, I'm going to give people a chance to see those as well.
Well, that's terrific. And Leslie's amazing. I always say to her, Leslie, how do you know everything and get around to everything that's going on? She said,
I mean, even things that I find out, I think I find out first. She found out about it yesterday. So
yeah, she's absolutely.
Amazing.
Evan,
yeah.
I understand you're trying to get Herald readers more involved in direct communications with the Herald. Is the Twitter account part of that?
Absolutely. You know, I've always been a proponent of answering every email I get. I think it's really important in this day and age for newspapers to engage readers however they want to be engaged, whether that's a written letter to the editor, which doesn't happen so much anymore, or an email or a phone call. But more and more, it's on Twitter and it's on Facebook. So I really think it's important for us to be there and engage with them, you know, instantaneously in real time. And I think that's one way to show readers that they're still important to us, whether they get their news online for free or whether they're still subscribers, which we love.
Well, you know, social media is changing constantly. It's hard to keep up with it. And you're so involved with it, Twitter, Facebook. What else? What other avenue are you looking at?
Well, there's Instagram, which is a big photo sharing service. It's an app that's really easy to use. It makes anyone's photos look great because there are all these different filters and focuses that you can use. But Miami.com, which I mentioned, our kind of sister entertainment-focused site, they have an Instagram account called at MiamiGrams. And I've joined that account, and I'm sorry to populate it with food porn, for lack of a better word. Whenever I'm out at a restaurant and I see something, or I'm eating something great, something looks pretty, whether I'm at home cooking something great and I like it, I'll take a picture of it and share it on there. So far, it's gotten some really good feedback from
what was the address again?
Miami Grams, like Instagram.
Miami Grams. Well, yeah, I must admit that I do the same. I must admit that I take mostly pictures of desserts. What can I tell you?
Your favorite. Evan, are you a good cook?
I love to cook, yes. You know, cooking is kind of how I got my start in food and food writing. I started cooking for myself at home and in college kind of first, and then when I was off on my own out of college. And then through that, I started reading about food and food writing. I read Bill Buford's Heat, and he was a New Yorker writer who went off and cooked with Mario Batali, and he thought he would just do it for 3 months for an article, but ended up staying for a year and left his job and became a full-time chef. Kitchen Confidential, of course, from Anthony Bourdain, I loved that. Making of a Chef, which was Michael Roman's story about how he, as a journalist, enrolled at the Culinary Institute of America, figuring if I'm going to be writing about these chefs for the rest of my life, I should know what they do. So those three books really kind of turned me on to food writing. And from there, I was at the Herald, and Kathy Martin, my predecessor in this role, she let me write about food and kind of go hang out with chefs in Miami restaurants and report on the trends that were kind of happening out in the trenches. And that was a ton of fun. So I owe so much to her for kind of giving me that entree into food writing here at the Herald.
That's really interesting that you started by cooking in college, a guy cooking in college. It doesn't exactly fit the, you know, our picture of what happens to guys when they go off to college, you know?
Hey, guys can do ramen as well as anybody else.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
But what I want to wonder is, what did the kitchen like, or what did the hot plate look like?
Yeah, right.
They were cooking. I've seen some of those.
No, it was nothing glamorous, but I remember one of the first meals I made for my now wife. At the time we were dating, but it was just like a salmon kind of in a simmered tomato sauce with goat cheese, and it was great. And she still requests that to this day.
He must have a very smart wife. She lets him do the cooking. I think that's really great.
Yes, I agree.
We'll talk about restaurants and all. That's a popular column. People always ask me, well, who reviews them? How do they review it? Explain a little bit how that works.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think the reviews are kind of one of the newsiest things we have in the paper, and that's one of the elements that isn't attached to recipes. This is our anonymous critic who goes out and visits restaurants a couple of times and gets a feel for the place, and then gives it a rating, 1 to 4 stars, which carries a lot of weight. You know, in this day and age, we're talking about social media and online reviews. Kind of everyone can be a critic, and I think that makes the role of the traditional newspaper restaurant reviewer all the more important. So our main critic, Victoria Pesci Elliott, she's been doing it for a long time. She's fantastic. She really has her finger on the pulse of not just what is out there, but what's good and what is viable to be a flash in the pan and what might kind of be around for a long time to come. So we run her column every week, and we also run a review from Broward that we borrow from the Sun Sentinel. So we have every week a restaurant review from Miami-Dade and a restaurant review from Broward, and I think readers really enjoy reading those.
And it's nice to have a professional review, because there's a lot, you know, talk about social media, there's a lot out there that is not so professional.
Right, and, you know, a lot of them will rush in to be the first one to review a place. And look, there's a time and a place for that. People are hungry for what's open, what just opened yesterday, is it good, what do they serve? So we have that, too. We have a writer named Sarah List who writes for Miami.com, and she does something called First Look, and she tries to get into restaurants in their first few days of opening and doesn't write a review, but just says, hey, here's the decor, here's the atmosphere, here's the menu, here are the price points.
Great.
And then, you know, Victoria waits at least 6 weeks before a restaurant is open to get its feet on the ground running and before she goes in to do her reviews. And she tries to mix up the days that she's there. She'll go on a busy weekend night maybe for dinner, and then she'll go on a slower weekday lunch just to get a feel for different times of service and who might
right.
be in the kitchen and on the floor.
Okay. Well, I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Evan Benn. He's the new Miami Herald food editor. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with the new Miami Herald food editor, Evan Benn. He's been telling us his plans for the food section, and we've been asking you what you'd like to see in the Miami Herald food section. Well, just to mention that Tuesday was Earth Day, as we all know, and continuing with National Green Week, Slow Food Miami will hold its third annual Snail of Approval tasting party. Well, that sounds good.
Snail of approval.
I don't think they're serving snails.
Yeah.
It will be at the Raleigh Hotel tomorrow night. That's Friday. And you're going to be able to savor Miami's farm-to-table, the best food, the wine, the cocktails. And it's a good benefit because it benefits the Miami Edible Gardens program, helping with school gardens in Miami-Dade County. And for tickets, you can go to brownpapertickets.com or just contact the Raleigh Hotel. All right, so it's dinner in minutes time.
Of course.
Of course. Now, today's dinner is a nutty baked shrimp with Roman spinach and orzo. And Parmesan cheese and walnuts coat these juicy plump shrimp. And it's just a 15-minute meal. And it won't break your calorie bank either. Place the shrimp in a shallow baking dish and toss with some breadcrumbs. Drizzle with some olive oil. Pour a little wine in. Then sprinkle the Parmesan cheese and some crushed walnuts on top. Just bake it 10 minutes. Maybe under the broiler for a minute to brown the top, and that's it. And while that bakes, you can boil up some orzo. Now that's the small, rice-shaped pasta, and just before the orzo is ready, you add some spinach to the water, and it just sort of wilts in the water. Drain it, and bring it back to the pan with some olive oil and raisins, salt, and pepper, and that's your 15-minute meal. And if you'd like another dinner in minutes, try the Greek gyro sandwich with tzatziki sauce. Sorry, I'm drooling when I'm talking about this. It's in today's Miami Herald. And for the shrimp recipe, you can go to dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, I wanted to talk to Evan about beer, as I said. Now, Evan, I see you have a long background in beer writing. You were the beer columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and for Esquire.com, and you wrote for Beer Advocate. What am I missing? Do you have more credits?
You've got it. But, I wrote a book about beer when I was in St. Louis called Brew in the Lou, and I helped the St. Louis Post-Dispatch start a beer app, a smartphone app, so people could get my mini reviews and everything at their fingertips. So that was fun. But I'm jealous of you being in Michigan because you have access to some great breweries up there.
Yeah, my brother-in-law is a major hops farmer up here. This is big, big deal stuff around here.
Wow.
But now I understand the book that you wrote in St. Louis was had a lot to do with Anheuser-Busch, which is a big company there. And although the kind of beers that they make tend to be flat in sales these days and craft beers are taking over, do you think Anheuser-Busch is worried or are they too big to fail?
Oh, they're definitely worried, and you can sense their worry in beers like Shock Top, which is Anheuser-Busch's Belgian wit beer. That's kind of their way to break into the craft market. Miller Coors, they're behind Blue Moon, which is another popular craft-like beer, but that's not actually a craft beer, which is, by definition, a craft brewery is much, much smaller than those breweries. They're independently owned, and they use traditional ingredients, whereas Anheuser-Busch and Miller Coors, they tend to use things like corn and rice in their beers. Those are things called adjunct ingredients, which lighten the flavor, lighten the color. There's a big, big push for craft beer. And when I was in St. Louis, I had gotten there a year after InBev, which is this big Belgian corporation, bought out Anheuser-Busch, which had always been a local, homegrown St. Louis company. So all of a sudden, there was this sea change, and people were more willing to try new things that weren't Budweiser. So as a result, all of these craft breweries started popping up. And when I left last year, 2013, there were 22 craft breweries within a two-hour drive of downtown St. Louis.
Boy, that's impressive. So why do you think people are going from getting tired of regular beer and going to craft beer? Craft beer is usually more expensive, it usually has more alcohol and has more calories.
It's sort of the same things that we talk about on this show. It's people care more about their ingredients. They care more about who's making things they put in their bodies. And people are willing to pay sort of a premium for better products, better food, better beer, better wine. That's a big part of why we're seeing this boom in craft beer. And it's just starting to reach South Florida, and we're seeing that with some great new breweries that are opening down here, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I guess we were behind the curve there for a while.
A little bit, but we're catching up. Miami has always been a cocktail culture and, chilled white wine and vodka, but craft beer is just as refreshing, just as versatile to pair with food, so it's really seeing its time to shine.
Well, here's my really crucial question. Why do you think a lot of craft beers have such strange names? I was looking up a list of them. Sick Duck, Homo Erectus, Seriously Bad Elf, Tactical Nuclear Penguin, and a whole lot that I can't say on NPR.
This is NPR,
yeah,
so watch it, Fred.
Yeah, it's getting pretty close there, Fred.
Well, a lot of brewers try to stand out by making a pun. There are a lot of hops puns, but there are only so many out there. So sometimes a lot of things, breweries have been creating this beers with the same names or beers that are close to the same names, and there have been a lot of trademark disputes and lawsuits actually in recent years between not just big breweries and craft breweries, but also among the little guys. That's something I actually covered recently for Beer Advocate, and I think it's an interesting story.
Do you think there can be such a thing as a beer snob?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's funny. When I did a story for our business section at the Herald on St. Patrick's Day on John Martin's Irish Pub, and I was talking to those guys, John Clark and Martin Lynch, the owners, about the craft beer movement and if they've really changed their beer selection as a result. And John, the owner, said, craft beer is for people who like to sit there and talk about their beer. We like to serve beer that people like to drink.
Of course.
Listen, I guess he's making his point, yeah. Well, yeah. What about you? Are you a beer purist who says it should be made only from wheat and hops and water, or do you appreciate novelty beers with honey and peanut butter and chocolate in them.
Look, I'll try anything once, and I will not snub my nose if someone offers me a cold Budweiser on a hot day.
He's a true beer person. Fred, before we go, someone's been waiting to ask Evan a question.
Okay.
Hello, Brian, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I had a question for
Evan?
Mr. Ben.
Yes.
I was curious. Congratulations on your new food editing job, but I wanted to know where you see the dining scene in Miami with respect to restaurants that are opening and closing over the next 12 months and over the next 5 years.
We only have about a minute left, but go ahead, Evan, see if you can answer him.
Well, that's a good question. Of course, it's hard to predict the future, but I do think I think Miami is really embracing the sort of local ingredient-driven food that Michael Schwartz really brought here with his Michael's Genuine Food and Drink in 2007. I know it's 7 years later, but I really think that's catching on in a major way. I think you can't open a restaurant in Miami now without having a well-sourced ingredient list with purveyors. You can't open a restaurant in Miami without having a craft beer list. So I think people are really caring about the hospitality and that side of dining. I think we'll see that continue.
Great.
Okay.
Nice.
Thank you.
Well, it's really been a very, very interesting week. And Evan, Ben, once more, congratulations on becoming the Miami Herald food editor.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
And good luck in your new post. Fred Tasker, great advice and questions, as always.
Always a pleasure.
Bonnie Berman,
yes.
Great to be with you.
Great
we hope
to be
that
with
Joe
you.
Will be able to come back next week.
I hope so, too.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. And thank you, Evan, and thank you, Fred.
Right. And next week, we're going to be talking with Dwayne Wade's personal chef.
Oh.
Right. Richard Ingram, about what the heat star eats to keep in shape and how we can do the same. We'll see.
With fewer calories.
Well, we'll
than
see.
The heat
well,
star.
We don't quite work it off the same way.
And not quite.
Yes. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.